You're listening to the Hockey Podcast Network, your home for hockey talk covering every team in the NHL. New episodes every Monday. Download at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Calgary Flames fans, it's time for Flames Unfiltered. Entertaining and controversial hockey talk with your host, Brad Berube.
Series tied 2-2. Damn, I hate overtime. It's taken years off my life. And where the hell is Jelena when you need him? It is time for a playoff edition of Flames Unfiltered, episode number 68, recorded on August 16th, 2020, following a Game 4 loss to the Dallas Stars in overtime, 5-4. Yes, very disappointing loss today, especially when we had it all the way up to the 11-second mark. Man, playoff hockey is just physically grueling to watch. I can't imagine what it's like to play a National Hockey League playoff game. It's crazy, man, the ups and downs of this series, the emotions. You know, it's weird. You know, you look at how the Flames have done through the playoffs so far, and it's one day you think the world of this team, and then the next day you don't think they're very good. 24 hours changes an opinion of a player, of a team. 3 days changes so much. Look at what 1 week does, man. A week ago, we were flying high, coming off a Winnipeg series that impressed every single one of us, and quite honestly, probably shocked most of us. It shocked me at the quality of the play, not so much that we won the series, but at the quality of play that we saw from the Flames. It's been entertaining. It's been exciting. This series with Dallas, I thought actually, I don't know, but you know what, 10 seconds changes it all. We win today and we get 3-1, and man, the whole perspective of this series is completely changed. But you can also say that for Friday night when the Flames absolutely steal one 2-0 when they had no business winning, and this series could have been 2-1 Dallas. So, man, there's ups and downs. There's all kinds of things, and I'm sure we're going to have many more with 3 games to go in this series. Can we get some first-line production? I don't want to have to bitch about Gaudreau anymore. I'm tired of it. A little better today. I'll give him that. But, yeah, we need some points, guys. We need some points. And, you know, another thing that's kind of weird about this playoffs, and another thing that's kind of got me, had me on edge the other night, was we had to worry about when we're that 9:30 game, which I love, or 8:30 game, excuse me. I love that time. It's a great time. I love late night games. It gets you excited for the whole day of hockey. But you know what? Now we got to worry. I feel like I'm at a youth tournament. We got to worry about the game before it going to overtime. And is it going to push back our game? And geez, we saw in the Tampa Bay Columbus game, it pushes games back to another day. I don't want that to happen. That changes everything. Last thing I'd ever want is a Calgary game to get canceled. But I thought we were going to get it when Game 3 of Vancouver-St. Louis went to overtime. And I'm like, oh, man. But, you know, then we got to worry about all these critics saying, well, you know what? We need to change the overtime. And we can't have these overtimes going late. It's not good for television. And we can't have 5 overtimes and all this da-da-da. We got to change it and have, you know, 4-on-4 in the playoffs and stuff. And I tell those people they're crazy. I hate talk like that. I hate talk like that as much as Corey Perry. That's bad. I don't like Corey Perry. On this episode today, it's a Stanley Cup playoff edition. Round 1. We're going to start the show with a game-by-game breakdown. I'll give you my opinions and my insight of all 4 games that happened over the week. And then we'll welcome in Michael Farley from the Clean Skate Podcast. He covers for the Dallas Stars for the Hockey Podcast Network. And we'll discuss the ins and outs of this round 1 matchup with the Stars. It's been a good one. And then we'll look into the goods and bads of the Flames in round 2. There's some of both. I'll believe you there. And some of them might surprise you a little bit. We'll wrap with some Flames news, a listener question, and a rundown of what lies ahead for the Flames. Thanks for tuning in to Flames Unfiltered. It's playoff hockey, and it is as good as it gets.
Balls can hurt, but yours don't have to. At Manscaped, we save boards. Prevent manscaping accidents with the Lawnmower 3.0, featuring skin-safe technology by Manscaped.
Get 20% off and free shipping when you use promo code THPN at manscaped.com. Your balls will thank you.
All right, Flames fans, lots of Flames games to talk about. Isn't it crazy? Four games to talk about in one episode? I don't even know how to do it. We'll cruise through these games. We got a great interview with Michael Farley coming up later in the show. But let's kick it off with game one. The Calgary wins 3-2, shots 26-26. Calgary, I thought, controlled most of this game. I thought it was a pretty good outing for the Flames. Ben Sagan struggled. It was good to see them struggling. Anderson gets the game winner and a nice shot. He just shelves it to go and get game one winner. A great way to start this series. I was pretty pleased with Tuesday night's effort from most of the Flames. 3-2. We'll take it, man. We'll take it. Two goals from our buddy Dylan Dubé. How do you argue that guy was on fire, man? Game two, things were looking good. The Flames struggled defensively, though. Started off, I thought, okay, things are all right. We score 19 seconds in as Dubé gets his third of this series. And man, things are going. But not a good night for the Flames. Talbot was not on his game. He stopped 31 of 36. Corey Perry seemed to be all over the place in this game. And then the problems happen, man. This is where the problems happen. Tkachuk gets speared in the nuts from Ben and leaves. And then comes back and gets sandwiched, really, and gets hit in the head and left the game pretty wobbly. So Tkachuk's out for the rest. We're down 4-2 headed into the third. And, yeah, it doesn't look like a good game for the Flames, and looks like it's going to be 1-1 series tie. Reeder scores a shorthanded goal at the 12:24 mark, and things are looking a little better. And then our buddy Sam Bennett scores with 2:40 to go on a great slap pass from Lindholm, and we're tied. It's a whole new hockey game, and all I could think of is, are we going to steal a game that we have no business winning? We've been outplayed, but we're going to steal a game? And then the Flames fall apart defensively. Instead of playing off the emotion of getting that late goal, the final 2 minutes look like a shit show. Bad. The defense went into a shell, and we allow a goal, 40 seconds left, on a beautiful backdoor pass from Corey Perry. Alinciak from the point activates in and gets the winner. Stars tie the series 1-1. Game three. This game could be summed up with two words, lackluster and awful. But the poor performance for the Flames, where they're outshot 35-23, results in a win. This was crazy. Both teams look like they lacked emotion this night. Yes, it was the second night of a back-to-back on Friday night. It was crazy game. 5-on-5 shot attempts were 32-5 in favor of Dallas. And Calgary has the only goal, and it's 1-0 after two. Then Backlund gets his first goal was Backlund's shorty, and then TJ Brody seals the deal late in the third. 2-0, Calgary wins in a game they had no business winning. Cam Talbot steals a game, and that's what you need your goalies to do in the playoff, and that's steal games, and he does just that. Cam Talbot with a shutout. Calgary takes a 2-1 series lead. And on to game four. Sunday afternoon today, while we're recording this, we just got done watching, and it goes to overtime. Let's talk about how the game started. Calgary gets off and has a great first 5 minutes. I thought Calgary looked amazing. And then they get a power play, and it seemed like all the momentum was sucked out of the Flames. Dallas gets their power play. Pavelski scores. And it's the first time in 12 games Dallas has had a lead, the first time in the series. The second period was a wild back-and-forth offensive period. Both teams traded chances and probably was the most entertaining of the period this whole series thus far. probably not for the coaches, though, because there was a lot of back and forth and a lot of turnovers. Calgary gets 3 goals in the period, 2 of them on a power play. Dallas gets 2 goals in the period, 1 of them on the power play. And we saw a little bit more physicality and grit and after the whistle stuff. Shots after 2 were even, 29-29. That's where things went a little bit goofy and shots changed a little bit. The third period, not one that the Flames are going to write home about. Penalties. There was just penalty after penalty. Calgary, 5 penalties in a row. 5 power plays in a row for Dallas. No makeups come back. Dallas does score on one of those. But good news, Reeder gets his second shorty of the series, and that puts Calgary up 4-3. And we're thinking, yeah, driver's seat. Here we go. We like this. Now, not so much. Dickinson scores to make it 4-4. But it was challenged. Corey Perry, obviously in the crease. But we got to wait for the replay. And then the way the official announced it, when he said the word, I can't remember what the exact word was, but incidental, I believe. When he said that, I thought, are you kidding me? I would have had a stroke. Are they going to let this goal count? They don't. It's no goal. So I'm thinking, all right, well, the final 2 minutes, Calgary is completely, completely wrapped in their own zone, can't get the puck out. Joe Pavelski gets a hat trick goal with 11.9 seconds to go. The offsides challenge it. It wasn't offsides. It's a good goal, and we're headed to our first overtime of the series. And have I mentioned, I don't like overtimes and the playoffs. I mean, I love it watching them if my team's not in them. When my team's in them, not so fun. Overtime goes almost 3/4 of the way through, and at the 16:05 mark, John Klingberg scores the overtime winner, his first of the playoffs, assist from Ben and Lindell, a slap shot one-timer from the point, and Dallas ties the series 2-2. Dallas has 100 shot attempts, 62 of which were on net. So we have a game, Calgary has 40 shots on net, which is above average. We have a game where it's 5-4 and we point to goaltenders as both having good games. Yeah, I don't know how many times we can say that. We have a whole new series. Just think, Flames fans, if we could have held that 11.2 seconds off, we're up 3-1. 3-1 is a huge, huge driver's seat. Now we're 2-2. It's a best of 3. This is going to get wild. And you know what? With the way this series is going, I have no idea what to predict.
InsideEdgeHockeyNews.com.
Joining Flames Unfiltered now is Michael Farley from Clean Skate Podcast. He covers the Dallas Stars for the Hockey Podcast Network. And welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me. Crazy game we just watched.
Yeah, just finished the 5-4 overtime win in Game 4 for the Dallas Stars. And yeah, it was, I don't even know how you describe that game. Kind of a roller coaster of emotions. I had feelings like at any moment Dallas was going to break away and score 3 or 4. And I had many moments where I thought Calgary was going to break away and score 3 or 4 in that game. And, 100-plus shot attempts for the Dallas Stars. A ridiculous amount of shots on net for both goaltenders actually had to play well. And it doesn't look like it would have been in a 5-4, but, really interesting game today.
Yeah, over 100 shots combined between both teams. It was a good game with both your goaltenders can allow 5 and 4 goals respectively and still finish with over a .9 save percentage.
Yeah, I mean, I think both coaches will probably be pissed after that game. Maybe you disagree with me on this. I thought there was times that Dallas looked awful, and I thought there was times that Dallas looked amazing. I thought there was times that Calgary looked amazing, and I thought there was times that Calgary looked god-awful. But I do know that if you allow 50 shots on net, you're not usually going to win a hockey game.
Yeah, you're definitely right. I mean, both teams looked on and off. I think the Stars looked pretty good, honestly. The end of the – honestly, most of the third period and into overtime, I felt like the Stars played pretty well. But there were just some moments for both teams where it was just like, what are you doing? Like this, it was like turnover after turnover in the neutral zone for both teams, you know, like, and I feel like that's what sort of feeds into both teams' games. It's really about possession. And, you know, if you keep turning over the puck and you're allowing the team to turn on you and get like those rushes on you, it just feeds into the other team's counterattack. So the less turnovers you can have, the better your team's going to play. And it seemed to be the way in this one. The Stars would get into like a cycle of just trying to, you know, defend, and then they lose the puck in the neutral zone. And the Flames would get into a cycle where they'd be trying to defend and they'd be losing the puck in the neutral zone. And it leads to a lot of like contained pressure for both teams.
Yeah, you know, and in the overtime, I thought once that Dallas, Gaudreau had two good chances in overtime, and Hudobin made good saves on both of them. And I thought once Dallas got past those scoring chances for the Flames, they just kind of buckled down and kind of took charge of the overtime. And I felt like, honestly, it was just kind of a matter of time before a shot was going to squeak through from the point, because it seems like that's the way the Dallas Stars score goals.
Yeah, it definitely seemed to be, I don't know, I feel like the Stars were getting, had better chance, or the Flames had some better grade A chances. Like they were, like the Flames, I thought, had more dangerous looks at the net, whereas the Stars maybe were going for, you know, quantity over quality. They were just throwing everything at Talbot, which I think is why you see maybe the shot totals skewed a little bit differently.
Yeah, I think I would agree with that. Let's switch gears a little bit here and let's talk the series as a whole. We saw Hudobin in game one, which resulted in a loss for the Stars. And we saw Bishop in game two, which resulted in a win. Kind of thought we'd see Bishop in game three, and we saw Hudobin. And then today, Bishop not even dressed. How does that impact the Stars? It's kind of a crazy question now that we're asking after Hudobin had a pretty good game in my mind, although I thought he looked a little shaky early on. All in all, a pretty good game. But when you look at what's left of this series, we're down to a best of three now. And how important is it to have Bishop back, or do you feel more comfortable just riding Hudobin from there on out?
So I know the Stars won their one game with Bishop in net, but you got to remember the Stars had a lead in that game. They had a two-goal lead in that one, right? And the Flames tied it 4-4, and then we won it with 30 seconds left. So I wouldn't say Bishop played phenomenally. I don't think he grabbed the net away from Hudobin, and he didn't. He was deemed unfit to play the last two games, and then, like you said, he didn't even dress today. So I think, obviously, there's still some health concerns about him, and it's one of those things that's like, he didn't, like I said, he didn't like, you know, hit it out of the park with his win on, when was that, Thursday. But I think that Hudobin has played well enough. And if there is even any doubt or question about Bishop's health, you start Hudobin. Like, you don't even hesitate if there's even a slight concern.
No, I would agree. I've always liked Hudobin. Actually, I kind of wanted Calgary to go out and get him when they were looking, and when they actually ended up getting Talbot. I thought he's been fine. I think he's had his moments where he looked a little shaky, but I think in Talbot has had his moments, especially in game two, that looked a little shaky. I'm getting all mixed up on my games now. It seems like it's been a whirlwind of games, and we've had, what, four games now in like 5.5 days. It's crazy amount of hockey. These guys got to be really tired after this one. Now, Tyler Seguin, who's really thought to be the Dallas Stars' biggest sniper, has really been snake-bit in this series, and he has hit the post I don't even know how many times. As a matter of fact, I don't know that there's a team that hits the post more than Dallas. Now, today they weren't... Lindell hit one from the crossbar today, but as a whole, not as many today. But boy, we saw a lot of posts in game two and three. Is there a reason that you can come up with that Seguin is having a little bit of struggles in this series?
I just think it's a boost of confidence. I think He's a big confidence player. And listen, I thought he looked good today. I thought he's looked good in the last two games. Honestly, they haven't really been doing a ton offensively, but they reunited Ben, Radulov, and Sagan. And I thought the last few games they've had some pretty good jump in their step. They've started to realize that, you know, hey, maybe we're not going to score the prettiest goals, but that Jamie Benn is still banging and crashing. Radulov's throwing his weight around. And they're attacking with speed, which I think is really all you can ask them to. And then it comes down to, you know, maybe they're forcing passes a little bit too much. They're gripping the stick a little too tight, and they're just not playing with confidence. They didn't have a great season. They came off of, right, everyone was talking about the break might break up momentum. But for them, they didn't really have any momentum. So I guess they're just trying to generate momentum now. And Sagan got a couple points today, which was his first since we've had hockey back. So I'm hoping that, you know, they're able to get off the schneid a little bit because, man, we could use them.
Yeah, you know, when this series started, if you would have asked me who I feared the most on Dallas, I probably would have said Sagan. What's crazy now with four games in the books, if you ask me what player on the Dallas Stars forward group is scaring me the most, I would say Corey Perry. And that, to me, is a bad sign for Dallas. Corey Perry's not brought in to be that threat, but I feel like he's been a threat and has been very effective all playoffs long.
Well, I think, and especially in this one, I mean, I like to talk about the Pavelski and Perry trade, or, you know, acquisitions together, that they sort of were bringing in the same sort of, you know, ideas and what game style that we were looking for, you know, that veteran leadership. I've sort of talked that point all year about why we made those moves. And, you know, this is when, like, we expect those moves to pay off, right? Pavelski didn't have a great regular season. Perry didn't have a great regular season. But to be fair, we didn't acquire them so they could have an outstanding regular season. We acquired them so that they can have really good games and they can show us what to do, and we can look to them for leadership in these games, not regular season games. And so Pavelski went out and had a hat trick. Like, that is... I don't notice Pavelski a lot, but he's somehow still scoring goals, and Corey Perry is being Corey Perry, and in the weirdest twist of fate, I am now cheering for Corey Perry.
I'm not. I hate Corey Perry. I always hate Corey Perry.
I understand.
You know, Pavelski, you mentioned him and his hat trick today and an impressive outing for him in Game 4, but prior to Game 4, I thought that Pavelski was pretty much a no-show. Where did that surprise you, and where do you see him? Do you see him picking up where he left off in Game 4 and Game 5?
I'm really glad. One of his goals today came on the power play. I think that is a spot where we expected him to be better in the regular season and into these playoffs. Our power play hasn't been outstanding, and, you know, and he plays on the big power play line with Ben, Sagan, and Radulov. So it's sort of, if that unit is going to get going and they're going to get going offensively, they got to use each other. So those three guys all need to get it right. Ben, Sagan, and Radulov need to get together. And I think that, you know, I'm hoping today he's able to build off that and we can bring in that momentum. You know, again, I think this game's all about confidence sometimes. And if you don't play with confidence, you're not going to have good games. And I think hopefully they're able to build off of today's, you know, overtime win. That's a big morale booster, and Pavelski's hat trick. And I'm hoping they're able to take some of that and actually use it coming into the next game. But the problem with the Stars that I've found all season is you never know what Stars you're going to get. It's that consistency that's been lacking all season. You don't, like, come this next coming game, I'm hoping they're going to play well, but they could come out and play just as flat as they did in Game 1.
I know, and I feel the same with Calgary. It's like all year it was my worry every night when Calgary played is what Flames team's going to show up. And then I had that same apprehension when we started our series against Winnipeg, and then we pretty much, for the most part, rolled Winnipeg and had good outings all but one night. And I thought, wow, do we have a team that can play consistency? We come out in Game 1. I thought we had a pretty good showing in Game 1. And then I thought we were really awful in Game 2 and in Game 3. In Game 3, Calgary wins this game 2-0. And honestly, I thought it was Calgary's worst game of the series. It had to be frustrating for Dallas and yourself, seeing Calgary playing so bad and you guys struggling so much to get the puck past hell. But we've talked about this series being a roller coaster of emotions. That had to be a very, very frustrating loss.
Well, I think, first of all, hats off to Cam Talbot. Like, I'm going to be honest. I gave the Flames zero credit in that. I thought if they're going to start Rittich, that's an interesting look. And to be honest, I didn't really have a lot of faith in Cam Talbot. So I thought we were going to, you know, have a little bit more of an offensive explosion against the Flames. And then to see him do what he did in that game three with that 2-0 shutout, like, that was so frustrating to watch. Like I left that game just downtrodden, I guess. Like, that it was just I felt like that was a spirit killing game, because that's a game we should have won. And I think Talbot stole one for the Flames there.
Oh, absolutely.
And I'm watching that game on the East Coast. I've stayed up to watch all 60 minutes of it, and it's 1 a.m. now, and I just watched the Stars lose 1-0 to Cam Talbot. Are you kidding me? It definitely was frustrating to watch, for sure. And I think it just shows, like, even this whole series, like, I know we've scored 5 goals twice now. Like, our offense at times still just has such difficulty generating high-quality chances.
Yeah, you know, and going into today's game, and speaking of the offense that you were just talking about, going into today's game, Dallas had allowed the opening goal in 11 straight games. Today, Dallas scores first. Do you think that played a factor in the outcome of today's game, or the style of play that Dallas was able to play today?
I think any time you're able to score first, it gives you an advantage, right? Anytime you're able to take a lead on your opponent, you have an advantage. I think that's pretty obvious. I don't know if they're going to be able to build from it, because, to be honest, I thought after the Flames scored that shorthanded goal and then we had the goal called back today, I thought those were all backbreakers. Like, those are just spirit-killing moments, like giving up a shorthanded goal like that. And so I give the Stars credit. There were a lot of moments in this game where they could have given up or been frustrated and sort of let things slip away from them, but they were able to buckle down and, you know, kind of keep chipping away at it and, you know, eventually able to tie it up and get the win there. But, you know, I don't know if scoring first this game will carry over to the next game. I think at this point, we're just looking to score any goals at this point. We don't really care when they come.
Now, speaking of scoring goals, I've been extremely, extremely impressed with the defense on the Dallas Stars, and not so much for their defensive capabilities, but what they can bring to your offensive capabilities of this team. Your top four with Lindell, Klingberg, Lincecuk, and Heiskanen are as good as there is in the National Hockey League, as far as I'm concerned. Talk to me a little bit about how important that is in this postseason for Dallas.
Well, our defense is huge. If they're not going, the team's not going. They are the heartbeat of this team. They are what everything flows through. Like, even our offense, like, our defense has fingerprints all over, you know, how we generate chances. If you want me to go on a rant about Miro Heiskanen, that kid is unreal. He's going to win the Norris someday. He is, like, his skating through the neutral zone, he's a one-man breakout machine. He can skate the puck through your players into the offensive zone. He can send a stretch pass to the offense and get it moving. He's a threat from the point. He's got some nice hands, so he can walk around people at the point to open up shooting lanes. And John Klingberg is just a smart offensive hockey player. He knows how to get the puck through, and he knows when to do it. You know, and then I think they are obviously our two flashiest defensemen, Alexiak and Klingberg, but you can't forget about the second half of each of their lines, because without Alexiak and Lindell on those lines, they're not able to play their style of game. Alexiak and Lindell can take a lot of the, you know, the the forechecking and the checking side of the game, and they're able to alleviate some pressure and get some room for Klingberg and Heiskanen to then skate at them. And anytime you have, you know, four guys or five guys in a rush, leading the way is Heiskanen, like that's a pretty dangerous offensive chance if your defense are able to jump in every single time. And with them split up, we're able to roll them almost half to almost all of the game. You have at least one of them on the ice, and that's huge for the Stars.
Yeah, it's definitely been a factor in this series, and a big fear for the Flames and myself every time one of those guys winds it up and heads through the neutral zone. The Dallas Stars today in Game 4 had five straight power plays, which I didn't think that was physically possible in the playoffs, but evidently it is. They scored on one of them and allowed a shorty on one of them. I felt like that was the biggest momentum change of today's game. Do you agree?
100%. That, like I said, I thought the game was over. I thought you guys had scored that shorthanded goal and we were going to, like I felt the air leave the building, and I'm not even in the building after that one goes in. And that's the third straight game with a shorthanded goal, I believe.
Yeah, it is.
You can't, like, that's, especially with the people we have out there, like, you can't have that happen. Like, that's such a killer. That's such a spirit breaker, that letting that in.
Your opinion on the goalie interference call, do you agree or disagree?
So, I mean, I think it's the right call. I mean, because I saw it and we scored and I jumped up and I celebrated and then I sat back down and they showed the replay and I was like, they're going to call it back. Before they'd even called the coach's challenge, I saw Perry, like they showed the overhead view and Perry's just planted like dead in the blue paint. And it's a good call. It does, like, it's not a goal, but it was just, it's always frustrating to watch because, like, especially looking at that point, that's the tying goal right there. And, you know, that could have potentially been the 3-1 series lead, you know, decision for Calgary. Luckily, we were able to tie it back up, but I think it's the right call.
Yeah, I that was the one time when I was like, okay, that one's a pretty cut and dried goalie interference, and I felt pretty confident it was going to get called back. And then when the way the official announced that it was a no goal, like, I can't remember what his first word he used was, but incidental, I believe, was the word he used. Or I'm thinking, I would have had a stroke. I thought they were going to call it a goal, and I'm just like, no. So, yeah, it was another roller coaster of emotions, just like Game 2 was when Calgary came back and then allows a goal late. This series has been a goofy one in a lot of different ways. We talked a little bit about who Calgary feared and who I feared with Sagan. When you looked at this series, who did you fear going into the series on Calgary, and who's impressed you the most on Calgary?
I think the easy answer for before the series starts is Gaudreau, just because, right, he's got that offensive ability to explode. But to be honest, I think the correct pick for who feared me most going into this was probably Elias Lindholm. Gaudreau doesn't have a ton of success in the playoffs. I think the playoffs are a really intense style and physical style of play. And I mean, listen, I don't want to hit on him because he's small, but I feel like he just has a difficulty playing through that, you know, that tough checking that is just every game, right? Regular season, you're going to have games that are a little bit looser, but every game is going to be tight checking. And I think that hinders Gaudreau a little bit. So I think Lindholm will probably be your most dangerous, because I think he's quietly very consistent and very dangerous. But I think who has impressed me most, oh God, it hurts me. Like, my insides physically hurt from saying this, but I think it's got to either be between, I mean, I'll say Cam Talbot. Just so I was gonna say Bennett, but I think I have to say Talbot.
Yeah, well, Talbot's been good. I don't know that I wouldn't say Bennett. I mean, Talbot was better in the first series, but I don't know if you can say anybody's been better on the Flames than Sam Bennett. Boy, that guy's—he's a one-man wrecking machine out there. And two cuts.
I can't believe that line is playing so well with Lucic on it. Like, I look at that line on paper, and that's just an anchor line.
They work hard.
I cannot believe it's doing so well.
They work hard. You know, you talked about Johnny Gaudreau, and I'm Johnny Gaudreau's biggest critic. And I noticed one thing, though, today. And everybody's going to say Johnny Gaudreau was better today. They are, because they're going to remember the two opportunities he had in overtime. And, and they're going to say, well, Johnny Gaudreau looked better when the game, meant the most, and that's overtime. Well, Johnny Gaudreau looks better in overtime. You want to know why? Because the game gets softer in overtime. Players won't go out of their way to make a hit because they're worried about making a mistake. So the game isn't as heavy in overtime as it is in a regular period in the playoffs. And that's one of the reasons why Johnny Gaudreau gets a little bit more room when it comes to overtime in the playoffs. But today's game ties this series back up at 2-2. And so now we're down to a best of three. How much momentum will Dallas carry into Game 5 with this huge overtime win today?
Well, I think they have to. They have to use what they learned and how they felt today if they want to have success in the next game. Like, they tied it up with 11 seconds left. Pavelski had a hat trick, and then they won it in overtime. Like that has all the recipes to ignite a fire in a team, and I just really hope, and like you said, I think like the Stars sort of figured out how to play in that overtime and a little bit near that back half of that third period. So I'm hoping they're able to look at, you know, where they had success against the Flames in this game, and they're able to take the emotions from this game, and they're able to package it into a better Game 5.
Now, the Dallas Stars are the oldest team in the playoffs right now. It seems like we've had, with this condensed playoff and in the bubble scheduling, I don't know if it technically has compared to other years, but they don't have that travel day, I guess. But it seems like more games have been jammed into a tighter time frame. Will that be a factor for this team with their age?
I think the older, more veteran teams probably benefited the most from having the break in between. Like, you look at a team like Chicago. If Chicago had gone straight into the playoffs right now, I don't think they beat Edmonton in round one. But they had a little bit of time to rest. Their veterans were able to catch their breath, and they're able to come at this, you know, a little bit fresher than you would going out of a regular season. And so I think the same thing is true here for the Stars. I think Pavelski, Perry, and all those guys, they've been able to have a rest. They've been able to catch their breath a little bit, spend some time with their family. And I think I think they aren't as slow right now as they would be going into regular playoffs. So I'm hoping that break, they were able to all catch up and, you know, get their stamina a little bit better, and they're able to, you know, last through these playoffs. And I think also, they're, like you said, they're the oldest team in these playoffs. They're the veterans. They also should know how to pace themselves a little bit and when to push it and when to let off the gas. So I'm hoping that helps a little bit more. They're able to, maybe outsmart their opponents with when to push and when not to.
How important to this series was the Matthew Tkachuk injury?
Huge. I think that's huge. One, because it, you know, it stopped all of us from seeing the Tkachuk Perry Bowl, which I, like, they fought in game one, so.
Which was garbage. I don't understand why Tkachuk even took that fight, because what's Perry doing? Like, what has Perry got to prove? Like, I don't know. That fight surprised me. I don't know why, because, I mean, like, Matthew Tkachuk's not a fighter to start with. Like, he's had, like, five fights this year, and all of them had to do with the freaking Cassian thing. I mean, I don't know.
I wouldn't say Perry is a fighter either. To be honest, I think Tkachuk and Perry play, or at least back when Perry wasn't so old.
They're mirror images of each other.
Yeah, they play that pesky sort of speed skill, but they're bigger. I would say Brad Marchand, but Brad Marchand's is pretty small, so Perry and Tkachuk are able to throw their weight around a little bit more. So I think that we're missing out on a lot of dirtiness from the series, or at least a little bit, because I feel like, right, because if Tkachuk starts, you know, doing his thing to our team, Perry or vice versa is just going to take that as a green light to go one step further. And I feel like there'd almost be like an escalation of arms race in just being that pest on the ice for the both of them. So I think with Tkachuk out, Perry has been able to focus more on his checking role and playing well, as opposed to the other shenanigans that maybe he would get involved in if Tkachuk was in the game.
Your take on the spear to the nuts of Tkachuk from Jamie Benn?
I don't think it was on purpose. You're going to hate me for saying that, but...
How do you accidentally spear somebody?
Okay. Here's the thing. So it was directly off of a face-off, yep. Right? So I think it's one of those plays, right? You're lining up next to the guy for the face-off. They drop the puck. The Stars won, or I don't remember whose zone it was in, but so they won the face-off back. It went back to the point, not into the defensive zone. And Jamie Benn, you know, I think he puts his stick out to hamper Tkachuk, you know, to slow him. And, you know, he's coming up to dig into it, and he just gets him. I don't think he was aiming for it. I think he definitely meant to hamper his progress and to, you know, maybe give him a whack. I don't think he meant to whack him in the nuts. Just like, I don't think he meant to do it. To be honest, I'd be more mad about the Jamie sandwich he suffered later in the game.
No, that was a check, though. Like, I don't mind checks. I don't like stick work. And I see where you're coming from on that. But you know how I would have handled it if I was Calgary?
How?
We don't need Zach Rinaldo. I would have had Zach Rinaldo completely drill. I don't know if I would have went after Benn, because quite honestly, I don't even care if Ben's in the lineup, because he hit so far, and I better knock on wood quick here, but he hasn't been all that big of a factor. But I would have sent Rinaldo in to completely obliterate one of your young defensemen. I don't know. I think it was one of those accidentally on purpose things.
I definitely think he was trying to do something, but I don't think that's what he was trying to do.
What surprised me the most on that, though, is that's garbage I would expect from Perry.
Yes, yes.
Not and Benn.
I'm surprised. I thought there would be a lot more heat, I guess. There's been some pushing and
there
shoving.
There hasn't
stuff,
been as much,
but,
though. It's been
that's
soft.
What I thought like a series with Perry, Tkachuk, you guys actively employ Zach Rinaldo.
Well, we didn't. We don't want Rinaldo out there. We don't have a choice. I mean,
I thought
Jankowski's very good. So
I thought there'd be a lot more bad blood in this series. I thought there'd be a lot more big hits and nastiness. And to be honest, we haven't. We've just seen some pretty sloppy hockey. But it's been fun to watch.
Yeah, it's definitely been an interesting series. And, I guess we just summed it up with the first sentence. It's been a roller coaster of emotions on both sides, and now we're down to the best of three. And I guess, you know, when I looked at this series, I knew this was going to go at least six, so I guess we really shouldn't be surprised. And I said game one was huge, and I said game three was huge, and I said game four was huge, and every game is huge when it comes to the playoffs, but I expect a pretty good games on Tuesday and Thursday for sure. It's going to be a good wild race to the end of this series, and I don't doubt that we have a date Saturday night to watch a game seven in this one.
Yeah, listen, I think we're going to get that game seven. I think this unless someone can really figure it out, because that's the thing with this series right now, is I'm looking at this and both hockey teams aren't playing super great hockey or inspired hockey, but all it takes is one of them to show up one game and be like, hey, we know how to do this now, and then it's over for the other team. But as long as both teams are sort of in this, like, how are we going to do this, state, it's going to be the same hockey, and I think it's going to go seven, and it's going to be an intense series.
That's definitely been exciting so far. I don't know. This one's taken a couple years off my life, I think, with it back and forth and last-second goals and all the craziness. But, it's definitely exciting. And you know what? The best thing of all is we have hockey back after what we went through for 3 months. So good visiting with you. It's always good visiting with you. And, next week, let's fire up and do the same and break down this entire series, which we both agree is going to be a long one and a good one. Thanks again for joining the show, and have a great week watching Stars Flames.
I'd wish you good luck, but I don't think we can do that right now.
We better not.
Thanks for having me.
Every team, everywhere, the Hockey Podcast Network.
All right, Flames fans, time to talk about the good, the bad, and the wins. Let's get the bad out of the way first. First line production. I don't like it. It's been bad. In game three, there was a little bit of line shuffling to try to maybe fix the problem. But I don't think that's the problem. And why should you screw with the other lines? Because line one can't get their job done. Gaudreau, again, disappearing act. Yeah, I know he's scored a few. Two of them, I remember, of the three, I believe, were just tap-ins on the side on a power play. He's created nothing offensively. And a couple turnovers in game three cost the team. Monahan, not the presence he was against Winnipeg. I feel like he lets off his foot off the gas once in a while. I liked him a little better today. I thought game four he was better, and I thought Johnny Gaudreau was better in game four too. I did. Monahan is better defensively, but he's just got to find his groove offensively. And he had a couple key chances early in game four, but he shoots it into the chest. Monahan's got to figure out how to get that shot off quicker. Now, that's crazy to say because he's kind of the master of the slot. But here's the problem, Flames fans. Monahan's great in the slot. He's wonderful. But this line can't control play in the offensive zone. They just haven't been able to do it at all. And that's not a recipe for success for this line. They're trying to do everything on the rush. But Gaudreau's not able to carry it in on the rush and sustain it. Now, Lindholm, I don't know, man. He just doesn't look right. I'm not sure if I can pinpoint what's exactly wrong on him, but he looks hurt. He looks like something's wrong. Game two and game three, I thought the Flames lacked intensity. Now, game four, I thought we were pretty good on the intensity meter, but there was a lot of other problems today. But intensity was not one of them. But game two and game three, I thought there was a little bit of that. We can't afford lax moments defensively or offensively for that matter. We need to make smart hockey plays. Now, where did that mojo go that we had in the Winnipeg series? We had a grit, we had a fire, and we had a drive, and that is not as strong as it was in that series. Now, does that have anything to do with Tkachuk being out? Maybe. He brings that factor, and we miss that dearly. But somehow we got to maintain that asshole mentality that we had against Winnipeg. Turnovers? That's another bad thing that's been happening. There's been a drastic increase since the Winnipeg series. Thank God Dallas struggles hitting the net. My gosh, how many times did they shoot wide? Especially in game three. Today, I didn't feel like there was quite as many defensive zone turnovers. I thought in the neutral zone, it was kind of a wishy-washy game. Now, the Tkachuk injury. He's missed game three and he's missed game four. It looks like it's an apparent head injury because of the way he reacted going off the ice. To me, I would say he has a concussion. Now, we can't say. We don't know. But, yeah, he was wobbly. And it's happened on a sandwich check from Ben, where he hit Tkachuk, and Tkachuk flew forward and hit face-to-face with, I'm not sure who, Lentziak maybe? I can't remember for sure on that one. But it was a big hit. I didn't think the hit was dirty. But he did get hurt earlier in the game, and that was dirty. He got speared in the nuts by Jamie Benn. We talked about it a little bit earlier in our interview with our buddy Michael Farley. He didn't think it was on purpose, but I think it was one of those accidentally on purpose. He left the game. He came back. Left the game with about 2-something to go in that period. I believe it was the first period. And came back from that, and then that's when he came back in the next period, and that's when he suffered the hen injury. So it's bad. We're missing one of our key cogs. Maybe not offensively, but one of our key cogs that stirs the pot. And I was just complaining about our mojo, and maybe that's the reason. Now let's talk about some of the good things we've seen from the Flames. And the first one on my list is Sam Bennett. His physical presence and his offensive presence have been a game changer. It was in the Winnipeg series, and I think it has been in the Dallas series. As of game three, he led the NHL in hits. He's had a strong presence in all four games. He's been difficult to play against every shift. Now, in game three, I thought it was his worst of the four games, but I thought game four, he was magnificent. He had two goals, had a couple great back checks that stand out. He had a stick lift on Radulov that was critical. Did take a couple penalties. That's not good. But I'll take that physical penalty he took at the end of the second. I'm okay with that. Now, Bennett has a bad knack of taking offensive zone ticky-tack hooks, and we need to keep him away from that. But I have nothing negative to say about Sam Bennett's play at all. Second thing on the good list is the versatility of Tobias Reeder. He's able to fill in for Tkachuk, to me, without missing a beat. Now, is that line as good with Reeder than Tkachuk? No, I'm not going to say that. But Tobias Reeder's done a hell of a good job. He brings speed and grit to that line, and no one works their ass off harder than him. Now, he's by him being able to fill that role of Matthew Tkachuk, he has allowed the Flames not to mess with the Bennett, Lucic, and Dubé line. And that line is arguably one of the best lines in the Stanley Cup playoffs this year. Now, to feed off that with Reeder is the penalty kill. This penalty kill is flat out amazing. Reeder's got three goals, one of them in the Winnipeg series, two in the Dallas series, one today. Backlund's got a shorthanded goal. He got that in game three, and that was a really critical goal. It was a game winner, actually. Three consecutive games, we have a shorthanded goal. Our penalty kill was amazing in game three. 4-for-4, not quite as good today. A little bit sloppier today. But all in all, the penalty kill has been great for the Flames in this playoffs thus far. Now, Cam Talbot. After a struggle bus game in game two, many people were saying maybe Riddick should get the start in game three. It's a back-to-back. Maybe this is a time to plug him in. Why would you do that? Cam Talbot was the savior in the Winnipeg series. Had a good game one. Yeah, he had a couple he'd like to have back in game two. But man, oh man, he comes back with a game three shutout and has a barrage of shots in him in game four. And yes, he allows five, but really, actually, could have been 10. I thought he had a pretty good game today. Another key thing for the Flames thus far has been Michael Backlund. The veteran forward likes the way this entire team is playing right now and the way they've bought in. His quote was, "I think our commitment to defense has been the best I've seen in years here. Maybe even ever as a team." He said that before game four. Game four was not so great. But you know what I think Michael Backlund has done for this team? Michael Backlund has stepped up the leadership role. He's been very good. I love his play. When he's on the ice, he makes things happen. And that's what we need from Michael Backlund. Now, let's talk about the wins and who the keys to the wins were. Game one, Flames win. Dylan Dubé, two first period goals, his second and third of the playoffs. He set the tone for the whole entire game, I thought. His second goal, highlight reel goal. When we look at highlights for this year's playoffs, that goal will be in there. I thought Sam Bennett was really good in game one also. Game three, how do you not give it to Cam Talbot? Talbot makes 35 saves. It's his fourth career playoff shutout and second this postseason. He won that game. He stole that game. And that's what you need your goalie to do if you're going to advance in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Michael Backlund, I thought, was also somebody that I wrote in my notes as having a hell of a good game three.
Hey there. Have you ever thought to yourself, I really like hockey, and I'd love a show to listen to, but I also don't have enough nonsense in my life and questionable opinions? I got the show for you, bud. And there's some really, really thirsty person in that group, okay? That will be like, I'll give you $7 for that lemonade. And the $2 person is like, whoa, okay, walking away. That person's crazy. That is exactly what happens in free agency all the time. And that is a really good metaphor. And if you don't appreciate it, put the phone down and get out of here. We don't want you around. You can't say, hey, you tripped this guy, but also he dove. Well, if he dove, I didn't trip him. If you're a goalie, just, you know, chill. You don't have to do as much as you think you need to do. But also, we talk about hockey. So go check out Siren Sounder, a Canes podcast on the Hockey Podcast Network. New episodes every Monday and after every playoff game during the playoffs. Let's go, Canes!
All right, Flames fans, time for a little bit of Flames news. Austin Zarnik left the NHL bubble in Edmonton to attend to a family member on Thursday, I believe. No further comment was provided, and our best to Austin in the situation at hand. But now, I'm going to get a little controversial. Him leaving came on the eve of the team having to find a replacement for Matthew Tkachuk. Tkachuk gets injured. Someone's got to step into the lineup. Zarnik does not get the call to step into the lineup. Is he pissed? Does the pending UFA, who has no contract for next year, say to hell with it? I'm not going to sit in this bubble without a chance of playing. If they don't give me the call when Tkachuk goes down and Jankowski goes out of the lineup, they're not going to give me the call this playoffs. This is my theory, but am I wrong? Calgary's Game 2 curse continues. Now, 11 straight losses in Game 2s dating back to 2004. Man, if we go to the next round, that has to change. Calgary has led 14 best-of-seven series after Game 3, 2-1. They've won 9 of them. Well, today, it would have been 10. But the opportunity was missed. Dylan Dubé's goal 19 seconds into Game 2 set a franchise record for the fastest goal to start a playoff game. That mark of 20 seconds was achieved by Joe Mullen in 1986 and Marcus Nilsson in 2004. I remember that goal in 2004. That was great. Here's a little tidbit of news thanks to the guys at Sportsnet. Did you notice that Anton Khudobin's knob on his goalie stick has been taped with green tape? Well, in the rule book, in the National Hockey League rule book, a goalie's knob has to be white tape. Ward called him out on it before the game today, and Khudobin had to make the change to white tape. A little bit of mind games? Wonder if Paul Maurice called him with that idea. Time to move on to our listener question. And we got a good one this week. Last week we had a Facebook poll. Next week, I don't know, maybe we'll do a poll next week. But got a good listener question from Danielle Goss. Got it off the Calgary Flames fan page, Facebook group. You got to go join it. Can someone tell me why the stick bashing into the glass in Game 3 was not an unsportsmanlike or a delay a game penalty? Will there be a fine from the league? Well, here's what happened. In Game 3, Blake Komal smashes his stick into the glass, the curved glass by the bench, and breaks the glass. This took place with 38 seconds left in the second period, and the Stars were just going on to a power play. The refs called no penalty on it, talked for a few minutes, and sent the teams to the locker room, opting to play the 38 seconds on top at the beginning of the third period. They'd stop the clock. But what does that do? That gives the Dallas Stars 38 more seconds of a power play on fresh ice, when ice has already been an issue because of multiple games in one day. It pissed me off. I don't think it's right. So I looked up Section 9 of the rule book and Rule 63, delaying the game. A player or a team may be penalized when, in the opinion of the referee, they are delaying the game in any manner. Is this not textbook delaying the game, purposely breaking the glass. Now, I'm not saying he thought he was going to break the glass. But isn't that like delay a game for sure? And if it doesn't fall under delay a game, how about Rule 75.1, unsportsmanlike conduct? Players on a club are responsible for their conduct at all times and must endeavor to prevent disorderly conduct before, during, and after the game, on or off the ice, or any place in the rink. The referees may assess a penalty to any of the above team personnel for failure to do so. I don't know. That would fall under that too, right? Well, evidently, not to the officials. I love that listener question. I thought of it as soon as it happened. And then I saw the question. I love it. I don't understand why there wasn't a penalty called on that. In my mind, there definitely should have been.
Get all your Flames Unfiltered podcasts, team news, team updates, and highlights at flamesunfiltered.com.
All right, Flames fans, time to preview the games ahead. And yeah, Tuesday, August 18th, we're back at it. Game 5. It'll be an away game for the Flames. Like, that really matters. It just matters in the line change. And we just finally, just now, got a time for the start time. It'll start at 3:30 p.m. Mountain Time. Calgary, Dallas, Game 5. A very critical game. I was hoping for the late start. I love those late starts in prime time, but you know what? This is a USA TV thing, I think. They had to get that Vegas-Chicago game in prime time. Now, still up in the air are times for the Game 6 and Game 7. Game 6, we are playing for sure. That'll take place August 20th, Thursday night. I think that one will probably be the 8:30 start, depending on if Chicago and Vegas continue that series, or Chicago can win again. I would still think they'd flip-flop prime times, and I see that one being the later game. And, of course, Game 7, if necessary, Saturday, August 22nd. Time to be determined on that one also. Next week, we're back at it again with another Monday episode on the Hockey Podcast Network and FlamesUnfiltered.com. We will put a wrap on round one of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Michael Farley will join us again from the Clean Skate Podcast, a Dallas Stars podcast. And you can listen to that podcast on the Hockey Podcast Network. And he'll join us again next week to wrap up this round one. And hopefully I'm talking about winning the Flames. And then, of course, our regular guest, Audie James. We're hoping we can get him back next week also to discuss all the happenings from round one and discuss either round two for the Flames or discuss another disappointing round one exit. I hope we are not talking about a round one exit. Oh, forget that. I want to talk about round two. I am not talking about a Flames loss. Let's get this done in two more, guys. We can't drag this out any longer. We need to have one of these overtime games go our way. On a lighter note, Tobias Reeder has 5 shorthanded goals in his life, in his career. All 5 of those goals, heck, 3 of them have been in this playoffs, all 5 have happened at Rogers Place. But you know what? Not one of them happened when he was in Edmonton Oilers. Take that one, Edmonton. Thanks for listening. Check us out on the Hockey Podcast Network, and also check us out on FlamesUnfiltered.com. Game 5, Tuesday night. Go Flames!
Get connected. Flames Unfiltered can be found on Twitter at Flame Unfiltered. And also make sure you check out our Facebook page at Flames Unfiltered. Check out host Brad Brood on Twitter at Brad Brood. And if you like what you hear, rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. You can find Flames Unfiltered on all the major podcast players. Consider subscribing to Inside Edge Hockey News on Patreon. That'll get you exclusive content and much more. Thanks again and enjoy the hockey. Thanks for tuning in to Flames Unfiltered. Check back for more action-packed Calgary Flames talk.
You're listening to the Hockey Podcast Network, your home for hockey talk covering every team in the NHL. New episodes every Monday. Download at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get your podcasts from.
This has been a production of Inside Edge Hockey News Radio, brought to you by the Hockey Podcast Network. This production is copyrighted and distributed by the Inside Edge Hockey Media Group.